All right. Happy New Year. It is Nazzy from the Pulse of New Hampshire. Time now for the longest running program on the Pulse of New Hampshire, Delta Dental Radio, featuring the one, the only, the man with the best hair on the planet, Tom Raffio, president and CEO of Northeast Delta Dental. Happy New Year, Tom.
Happy New Year, Nazzy. And always great to see you, but That's also right. hear from you.
Yes.
And,
yes.
And you have to put the little qualification that it's not just the longest running with the curly hair, but the same host running consecutively on weekends for 13 years.
Not rubbing it in, nothing. It's just the truth.
And I'm a swell dancer, dancing with the stars, Victor, at one point.
That's true.
And an author too, which is what today is all about. But go ahead.
We're going to talk about that. And what was your time? You did, was it the Santa Shuffle? You did something a few weeks ago. What was your time?
Yeah. So I'm running slow now for a 5K. Is more like I used to do it like 20 and change. Now it's like 30 and change. But I have
it's
fun.
It's okay. It's okay. You know what? As long as you get it done, as long as you cross the finish line, that's really all that matters.
And I made every one of the Millennium races. So I ended up number two in my age group, which is just that expression that 90% of life is just showing up is really true when it comes to running. So,
well, listen, it's good for you. Did you get the jacket? Did you get the Millennium jacket?
I did. Yes, I did.
Yep,
I did.
That's excellent. All right, let's get into our subject today. Who is our guest today?
Well, the one and only, talk about someone that's nationally and worldly acclaimed, former Chief Justice of the New Hampshire Supreme Court, Justice John Broderick is my guest today. There he is. Oh my God.
Tom, how are you doing? Good. I would run a 5K race myself, but it would have to come with an overnight. So I couldn't go all five at once.
We'll bring an hourglass. So let me introduce John to the listening audience. So of course, everybody knows John as the Supreme Court Chief Justice. So when I introduced John, when we used to speak together, this was pre-pandemic, and we still do a lot of speaking, though. Most of the time now, of course, it's virtual. But he always would tell me that the biggest accomplishment of his lifetime is the mental health awareness. And of course, we've had recent examples in different sporting events, including something that occurred in the Tampa Bay Buccaneer game, you know, not too long ago. So I always admire John for that, because here's a man. How many people in the world can say that they were not just on the Supreme Court, but they were the Chief Justice, but basically defers to that and says the biggest accomplishment his life is the mental health awareness. So, John, thank you for joining me for Northeast Delta Dental Radio. So tell us, just, I know we'll be talking about the book and the leadership during the crisis, but just give us the 2 minutes on how you navigated the mental health journey and how this has become your life's work.
Tom, thank you. No, it really has, Tom. Some years ago, my own family was very publicly involved in mental health. It was a really hard time for my family, and it was on the front pages here and elsewhere. And I made a lot of mistakes because of my own ignorance. And through the grace of God and the skill of a lot of good people, we came through that. But I'm a baby boomer, and my generation never talked about it, and that would have been true, but for the fact that I was asked to get involved in a campaign in New Hampshire, a national campaign, but we were going to be the first state to make people aware of the common signs of mental illness. And since I had not been aware of them, and since it seemed important in the healing of my family, I said I would get involved. And for the last 5+ years, with the help of Dr. Titchcock and your help, Tom Raffio, from the very beginning, I've been able to travel throughout New England and sometimes beyond, spoken to 130,000 people. I've traveled 90,000 miles by car, talking about mental illness. And the goal is to educate people on what it is and what it's not, and also to change the conversation and the stigma that has existed and continues to exist. And I found it the most enriching and rewarding work of my whole life. I would speak every day if given the chance.
And what John and I, kind of using shorthand, we always say, like, until the public, the body politic, everybody, parents, kids, although kids generally are pretty open about it, are willing to talk about, you know, a mental health issue in the same context that they would talk about, you know, that they have a meniscus issue on their knee. Until we get to that point, you know, there's more work. But as John said, he's traveled hundreds of thousands of miles. And I can tell you, when I've been with him and we asked the audience who's been impacted by mental health, and John will ask two or three questions, you know, whether it's yourself, and, you know, a third of the audience raises their hand, and then your spouse, and then another third, close family, another, you know, a few. And then by the end, everybody has their hand raised. So it's all out there. And I think that getting rid of the stigma, and I know from a business perspective, we've done a lot of training so that, you know, managers are very comfortable talking about mental health, no different than, you know, like I said, if someone comes into one of our manager's office and says, well, I need meniscus surgery, I'm going to be out for 2 weeks. That's a very comfortable conversation. And there's no awkwardness. If the same person comes in and says, you know, I'm having some issues at home from a mental health perspective, we don't want that to be awkward. We want the same degree of comfort and nurturing as if the person, you know, needed knee surgery. And John knows this, but because of the training he's done here, he's spoken to our employees 3 times, including during the pandemic, that I know we have saved, you know, at least one new employee who, you know, might have been out after a couple of months, but because the manager recognized that there was a mental health component, we were able to work it. So thank you, John, for what you've done for society on, you know, on that front, putting yourself out there.
Tom, one thing I'd like to say, first of all, you guys, Delta Dell is always ahead of the curve on most things, and it's true on this issue too. And it's in everyone's self-interest as a business, because businesses writ large nationwide lose upwards of $200 billion, with a B, dollars a year because of mental health and substance problems, because they train people and they turn over more quickly than you want, or they're absent from work because they have a mental health issue or someone they love does, or they're at work, but because of mental health problems, theirs or someone they know or love, their mind is not at work. So their productivity declines. And if you add up those 3 things, it's a lot of money. So it's in the self-interest of businesses in a bottom line sense, but in a loyalty and respect for employees, which at Delta Dental I know is a very high priority for you, it really matters to people. And to be able to confide in someone at work that you or someone you love is having a mental health problem, it makes you feel safe. And that's what we're trying to accomplish. And every business needs to get where you are, to be honest.
Well, thanks, John. And of course, John has not only had these conversations at the business level, but also, as he mentioned, with schools. When I was chair of the State Board of Education, he spoke to the State Board, and then he's been in numerous schools. So I just want to, again, thank you so much. And I can only tell you that when you have spoken to our employees, it's just amazing, you know, what you've done. So thank you. So let's segue to today's core topic, which is prepare for crisis, plan to thrive. And as an aside, I've known John for many years, and he does hold the record. Next week's guest used to hold the record, Dr. Silvio Dupuy. Sil used to ask me to, you know, donate to the Palace Theater and other causes, all of which were awesome. And it usually would take Sil like 5 minutes. So when John posed the question on changedirection.org, which is the program that he referenced earlier, within, I don't know, 30 seconds, I was writing out a check for $5,000 and and the rest is history. And as John said, he's been really supported by Dartmouth Hitchcock, and I'm on the board of Dartmouth Hitchcock, so I know what a great organization that is. And their CEO and president, you know, Dr. Joanne Conroy, definitely deserved to be a, you know, Citizen of the Year recently. So you read Prepare for Crisis. What are your thoughts as you read it? And thank you kindly as well for, you know, such a nice, you know, testimonial about the book.
Well, I'll tell you, Tom, in my lifetime, I was the head of the court system and I was head of the law school here at UNH. So I've had opportunities to provide leadership. And so I know something about it. But I was so impressed by what you wrote. I really think it's a primer that everybody in a leadership role who aspires to be should be reading it. And what I loved about the book, which is talking about leading in a crisis, is that it's pretty clear from the way you digested it that while you need to lead in a crisis, you can't start the leadership skills you need or the culture in the business that you're leading the day the crisis begins. And so you have to lay a foundation for the company. And at Delta Dental, you have been true to what you've been doing, and you had a very strong and positive, understandable mission statement, which I was impressed to see every leader in the business had to sign and sign on to. And you also had some very discreet core values here at Delta Dental. There were four of them. And what you pointed out in the book, which is so true, when the crisis strikes, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. You have to apply what you've been doing in different circumstances. And so as long as you know what you're about and what your business is and who your base is and what your values are, you can get yourself through that crisis, which is seemingly exactly what you did. And you came out more than whole in the process. It was very inspiring to read it.
Excellent. All right. So, Tom, let's take a quick break. And we'll come back and we'll talk more with Justice John Broderick next. All right, it is Nazzy from the Pulse of New Hampshire. Tom Raffio, President and CEO of Northeast Delta Dental, Northeast Delta Dental Radio. Wonderful guest we have today, Tom. Justice John Broderick, this is amazing. I'll let you guys get back into your conversation.
Great. And again, we all want to thank Justice Broderick for his work in mental health. So back to the book. So essentially, we had actually prepared for 10 years for a crisis. Where our buildings are at in Concord, there's actually a train line that carries cars occasionally that contain a lot of combustible stuff. So we had had done planning in case there was ever an explosion. And I'm not going to sit here and say that I predicted COVID-19, but we did know that there might be some crisis, some pandemic. I had read John Barry's 1918 book. I'd actually gone back as well to Daniel Defoe, Journal of the Plague Year. So I was always fascinated by pandemic. So for 10 years, you know, we built up reserves and we used the Baldrige Performance Excellence framework to build up our reserves. So we were able to use that planning to then, give back, you know, $27 million to the community. And as a recent union leader article suggested, we did it in a very logical way. We first made sure our employees were safe, getting them out of the building, setting them up at home. Then we wanted to make sure that our dentists were whole because they couldn't see patients except for emergencies between March 16th and May 11th of 2020. So we gave them $7 million to stay in business. And then we said, okay, the dentists are up and running, but if employers drop dental because they're suffering, as everybody was back in the spring of 2020. So then we gave premium relief to our employers. So that was like $19 million. So, because our theory was, you know, if the dentists are up and running, but no one's going to the dentist because people drop their dental insurance. So we didn't want that. And then John, we said, oh my God, if we do premium relief, which means we're not collecting premium, insurance brokers get paid as a percentage of the premium, and they're small businesses. So we thought, you know what? Oops, we better pay them as if we collected the premium. So that was another $700,000. And right before the pandemic hit in mid-March, or at least we knew it when it hit in mid-March, we had given out $500,000 to various nonprofits. So we called them all and said, you know what? We've already given you the money. You don't have to use it for what it was assigned for. If you need instead, if you need it to survive the pandemic. And then little things happened, John, like then we realized, you know, as employers were laying employees off, those folks, as you know, go on something called COBRA for the listening audience. When you retire or leave a company, you're eligible to extend your benefits through federal law called COBRA. And so we, because of one of our subsidiaries, we knew, you know, which employees of the employers that we cover were laid off. So we contacted them and gave them premium relief. And I can tell you, John, you know, $100 premium relief for someone that's been laid off is like giving them $1 million. And it was just like the letters are. So that it was kind of a, you know, logical approach. And because we're in considered in New Hampshire, a large company, we're able to do that because we had grown the reserves for 10 years, thinking that there might be a pandemic. So the question after saying all that is, obviously, many, many other employers are much smaller than Delta Dental. Do you think some of the things that I've written about can be adapted to a, you know, a smaller employer that might only have, let's say, 10 employees?
Yeah, absolutely, Tom. I think almost everything you said is scalable. One of the things that impressed me about the way you managed the crisis is you first took care of your employees. You understood that loyalty to that staff is going to pay dividends to your clients. And you did that. And I think you have 200 plus employees here in New Hampshire. At the end of the day, I think only two of them were laid off, which is remarkable. The other thing is you took care of the people who were your customers, and you kept 98% of your customer base, which I think was the best performance of any Delta Dental operation in the continental United States. So that was pretty remarkable. I think loyalty and transparency fit everywhere. One of the things that was really impressive to me is that you, Tom Rapio, sent an email virtually every day for 18 or 19 months to your employees, many of whom were then working remotely, so that they would be kept abreast of what was happening, that you appreciated what they were doing, and your staff was, I'm sure, very appreciative of that. You did something very similar to all the dentists in the state and the people who were providing those services. And one small thing you did, which would be easy to overlook, as I understand it, if I'm building a crown for someone, I'm a dentist, and it takes 3 visits, normally they don't get to build until the work is done. But what you did is if they had started that work after visit 1, they could bill you for the 3 visits and you would pay them early, which for cash flow purposes meant a lot. So you took care of your employees. Everyone can do that. You took care of your customer base and they appreciate it because of your retention rate. And you didn't give up your charitable giving, or in the case of your providers, you gave them grants. They aren't loans. They're grants of $7 million to help them through the crisis. And it was remarkable. And I think you were able to do it because you were smart about it. You were planning for this or something like this, as you said, for years in advance. So when it finally hit, you were not flat-footed. You were able to act. And you really helped the business. And I think every employer, large or small, needs to plan for some downturn. This was pretty precipitous, but everyone needs to plan for that day, and you should be credited with doing that. And everyone survived it.
And I think, you know, the next crisis I'm thinking is probably going to be, you know, cyber orientated. And so as with your help and our next weekend's guest, Dr. Silvio Dupuy, we sort of, rewrote the end of the book, and we called it "What If It's Not Over?" And basically applying the principles, because you know, whether this biological crisis continues all the way through 2022, or if there's a new biological crisis, or if there is a cyber crisis, there are certain tenets, certain principles, one of which you referenced about communicate is so critical, because people want to know. We literally have no turnover. We have no turnover and no open positions. And I know a lot of sectors have open positions. We're not running a country club. We pay probably at the 50th percentile. But the reason employees tell me is because they know where the company is heading. They trust the leadership. They trust the board. And those daily communications, someone asked me, wasn't it hard to write every day? We're now something at like 430. I've numbered them all. And not really, because there's always something to say about where the company is heading, number one. And number two, the family component, because as people started to work virtually and maybe were feeling guilty that their kids were distracting them, I would show them examples of me being distracted by my granddaughter who was living with us. And so that gave them a sense of comfort. Okay, I'm working from home. There's going to be a period of time where, you know, I'm not going to be quite as focused, but that's okay. And so if you're a small employer listening to this, I encourage you, to get the book at Gibson's or the Bookery, or if you want the Amazon truck to drive up your driveway. And I say this because it will give you the sort of the outline, so we're prepared, you know, for the next crisis. Because as John mentioned, you won't be off balance whether you use the Baldrige framework or another, business methodology. You'll be ready and ready to pivot to the new world. And to give you an example of that, we knew we needed a phone system where employee colleagues could take the calls in a distributed way from home. Taking calls from home isn't brilliant, but a system which allows the 20 customer service reps to take the next available call as if they were in the office and track statistics, that required a significant upgrade in our phone system. We actually, John, had planned for that and put it in. And as a result, we literally have no customer service rep turnover. And unlike other businesses who you might be calling during the pandemic and waiting literally 10 minutes, a half hour or an hour, our statistics are better than ever. You call in, and I challenge anybody, if you want, call in our 800 number, and you'll see you get a human customer service who's happy and educated within about 20 seconds.
I just want to say one thing, if I can, because you never give yourself enough credit, because that's who you are. And in the book, you talk about servant leadership, and which you ascribe to, which requires a fair amount of humility, according to the Baldrige principles, and you exhibit that. And so you're serving your employees, you're serving your providers and producers, and it shows. The other thing I think is transferable to any entity is the idea that you need to trust the employer. And the employees have to feel that, the providers have to feel that, and transparency and integrity matter. They really do matter. And I think that was obvious from what you wrote. And what was impressive, what you were saying a minute ago, you have the statistics in here. When people would call in and they would be on the phone like 10 seconds or 15 seconds or 20 seconds, they had someone answering their questions. And not only were they picking up the phones, but they were working closely with the people who were calling. And in the world of, pick one of the following 12 numbers to speak to a live person, it was very impressive. And I think that probably helped a great deal on the 98% retention.
Absolutely. Excellent. And the servant, Nazi, I'll just close with the level 5 leadership or servant leadership. And John, of course, follows that as well. If you give back to the community, if you serve your employees and your customers, the numbers will take care of themselves.
Amen.
You just have to take the long view, as Justice Broderick does in his personal and professional life. So, Justice Broderick, thank you for joining me. As always, I get energized when I talk with you. So thank you.
Tom, thanks. I love the book. I've read the book. I hope everyone gets it.
Prepare for Crisis, Plan to Thrive in NASI. You know, the Bookery, Gibson's. If you must, Amazon.
Right. Last resort. Buy local. Go to Gibson's. We love Gibson's. We were in there last week. Gentlemen, thank you both. We will see you next week on the Pulse of New Hampshire.
Great.
Thank you, everyone. Thanks, Tom.